Good morning. The Thursday edition of Don't Brass That starts right here, right now, on your Voice of Barbados. We're broadcasting from River Road, Bridgetown, Barbados on 92.9 on the FM dial. This morning, I want to start with an analogy that I've been thinking about, and I would like particularly electors to listen to me, as this is a season where people will be competing for your mind and soul, so to speak, but more so for your ex. I've been giving this a lot of thought of late, and I'm going to make it short because I have a special guest in studio, and I want to go over and speak a bit about what he came here to speak about. But I was thinking of this next coming election in relation to a horse race. And the way that I see it, I see the economic climate as the track. And I see Barbados as the horse. And I see whoever governs us as the jockey. And this came to my mind because a lot of times there's commentary on call-in programs and talk shows about how unfair it is or how balanced it is and so on. And I've realized and I've developed a certain pride of being here at Voice of Barbados because we hear both sides, both types of voices, for and against. And it gives me special pleasure to sit here on this side of things. And I remember in 2007, the government being pilloried. I remember in 2013, it was the other way around. And now it is back to the same old same where, to me, the government gets more stick than anything. And it makes sense. It makes common sense. Because he who rides the horse would receive more commentary on how that horse is being ridden than he who used to ride the horse. But let us ask ourselves the question, and this is my dream, my hope for the coming elections. I hope and I pray that I have a dream that in the next election, that we will vote based on long-term Barbados. That we will not vote based just on who gives us $200, who promised to put money in our pockets, who gives us a job, but who can create the environment in Barbados that we can have long-term prosperity and wealth as a nation and wealth as Barbadians. That we don't just vote based on Grantley Adams or Errol Barrow or who our grandmother, sister, brother, aunt, boyfriend, husband votes for. But for the team that we believe that will take Barbados into the 21st century and make Barbados the best that it can be for the next 50 years. The trap for me is the environment. Can we blame the trap? Because other people are riding on this same track and they're seemingly doing well. But like an athletic race, is it that they're on the outside and when you line up, you really see who's in front? Are they coming from so far behind? Or is the track just a good track? Is something wrong with the horse? The horse has been passed over. Now, some people may say nothing's wrong with the horse. The horse, we gave over a very good horse. Some people may say that horse have internal hemorrhaging, internal bleeding, because we were on the accrual system and we went back to the cast system. Some people may say it's the jockey. The jockey may be doing a fantastic job riding this horse that's hemorrhaging on the inside and have internal bleeding. Or we may have a good track and a good horse and bad jockeys. These are things they want us to think about, and not just Errol Barrow, Grantley Adams, 1966, but 2030 and 2040. But that is the political. But on Brass Tacks, we don't just deal with the political. We deal with the community. And coming from a community, there's a gentleman who called me during the week. He's been coming here looking for me, and he is now here with us. And he has a problem that we've talked about here. And one of my missions here is that I've been told that some of these topics that we talk about, you all were talking about in the 1980s, before I was born. In the 1990s, late 80s when I was in Pampers. But for me, I don't want that 20, 30 years from now, there's someone else in this chair talking about the things we're talking about now and the things you talked about yesteryear. So how do we fix them? So they have other issues to talk about. I say good morning and welcome to my guest, Concern, Mr. Concern Resident. Good morning and welcome to Voice of Barbados.
Morning, sir. Glad to be here.
I don't know how glad you are to be here, but I want you to share with the public the reason that you're here.
Well, I'm here because of the flying of kites over the last 3 years. And it's very annoying, especially when you come home from work and you want to rest. You can't rest because of the kites. And not only that, as soon as the door's off, and get up and go to the bathroom. You hear that song, you can't go back to sleep at all. And then the next morning, you got to go to work. And you're on the job sleeping. And you can't tell the boss that you're tired, that you can't sleep. And then when you come home in the evening, suddenly you don't see them. When you go and lay down, you get back up, they're up in the air. Sometimes one night, two nights, three nights. Sometimes 3 days, 4 days, three nights, over and over and over and over. And it goes on and on. 3 weeks before Easter and 3 weeks after Easter. As soon as the wind come up, they put them up. When the police go, person tell them take them down. And as soon as the police turn them back, they put them back up again. And the police keep going and keep taking them down. And as soon as the policemen leave, they put them back up over and over. And when they find out who the person that sent the police, to come to beat you, come and quarry you, tell you that they're going to shoot you when you pass the road, drop remarks. You can't be peaceful. So when you leave work, you just tell yourself, it don't make sense going home. Because when you go home, before you get to the bomb you got, you can hear them up in the air all the time. You don't feel like going to the same house. You feel like leaving. It's very hard out there that after working so hard upon the day, you come home at night, you can't rest. If you're doing morning shift, you got to get up at 5 o'clock. Sometimes, whole night, you doze off, and then when you get up, you go to work. You done your shift at 1 o'clock, and you come home at about 1:30, and you lay down sleep. When you get up the evening, 4 or 5 o'clock, they're up in the air. And it's very hard that then you can't get no rest at all. I got a next door neighbor suffering with diabetes. She can't sleep well. And she said the kids got a can't sleep at all. Don't care how she try. My next door neighbor to the left. She said when she go to the front house, she don't hear it. As soon as she go in the bedroom, she hearing it and she can't sleep. No rest, no time. Day after day. Night after night, year after year. And you understand that some was flying over a Strathclyde and the police went up there and cut them down. And you understand that some guys had to went to court and pay for noise pollution. It's very hard that you can't rest in your own home. So you feel like selling the house, the land, and moving. Because the thing can stop. I would like the authority out there, anybody in authority that listening, to please help with this situation. This situation is sickening.
Did you ever find yourself in any type of altercation with these guys flying the kites?
Well, I sent a policeman for Guy Reddy, and I don't know how you know my name, but a guy told me that this guy was on the beach asking for me, and he tell the guy he don't know, and then he came be an ass mechanic. This happened about 3 years ago. And he tell the mechanic he went by my house trying to do something for me, but he can't remember where he live. And the mechanic tell him. So I was inside and I hear the calling out. And when I hear the calling out, I peep out, I see this van, and I went answer. And less than a fraction of a second, which is 5 over 8 or 1 over 1,000, I hear these rocks on top of the house. So he stayed quiet. And I been to the police and tell the policeman. The police asked me how you know. I tell the policeman, well, when the van went down, I was at the back of the yard then and I see like the top of the van going across the back of the gap. But I can't really identify the van as much, but I know it was him because he come asking for me. He never went at my house and work. He never went to do nothing for me. And then I had to went to the station. And the station sergeant went, make him take it down. And they put it back about 3 times. The station sergeant went and tell him, well, if you don't stop with this noise pollution, we're going to go and charge you. So he take it down. But for the last couple of weeks, you know, the system getting to be more and more all the time. People crying out all their Chelsea Road, you know, and There's nothing that could be done. I don't know.
It sounds like you're a hostage in your home, and particularly there are some things that stood out to me when you spoke about this matter, the passion in which you spoke about it, the fact that you've worked so hard to get a home where you can be peaceful and you do not want to go home, where you may have people in the neighborhood, elderly, babies, the ill, the infirm, they cannot sleep. But more particularly, the threats to live in a home and know that because you try to get peace, that rocks could be thrown on your rooftop. The thought that someone was calling you out of their house. I don't think they were calling you out of the house to give you a high five. The fact that if you came out of the house, you probably may not be sitting here today. And the type of society that we live in, when someone threatens to shoot you now, it cannot be taken lightly. The whole idea that we have a lot of people who try to do business in this country and have to apply for noise pollution permits to have the various parties and fests, but people can launch noisemakers in the air. Now, the comments, the insensitive comments have already started to come. And because here is where divergent views meet, I will put both sides. This one says, Korea had a kite problem in Bourne's Village for the last 3 weeks now, and I cannot sleep night after night after night. But this one, there are two that came in. One I recognize. Good morning to you, Cammy. And this, like, have he never flown kites before? Have I have moved the seaport and airport for the waves crashing, always crashing, and the planes taking off all during the night? This other one says, good morning. Kites was not only now flying, but these people complaining, didn't they do the same thing to other people as well when they were small? You used to fly noisy kites when you were falling up small as well?
Yeah, but you couldn't let them stop out so long. You could let them stop out. Your family may take them down.
Mm-hmm. So you see, the society have descended into being irresponsible where there's no one really to tell these people to haul in the kites at night. I wanted to raise this here, though, because I believe from time to time, as a community station, we've got to get into the community, get into the community's problems. Now, many people listening may not have the problem, but I think that as our brothers and sisters, keepers, we have to raise the ante on these things. And more importantly, we've got to look to solutions. So the question from the Royal Barbados Police Force and from the Barbados, from the Bar Association is, what are the rules, the regulation, and the position and policy on these things? Can the law on noise pollution apply to kites? Can things be done? Can people be charged? Can this be monitored in a situation where concerned citizens like my guest can get, all you're asking for is peace and a good night's rest? I don't think that is too much to ask. I know people will line up on various sides or on one or two sides on this particular issue, but these are things that I believe that we here at Brass Tacks can facilitate, as they are very, very serious issues. Now, the kite may not be the serious issue, but the violence, the situation where you decide to go outside and be aggressor or you have to be a defendant, those are things that we need to discuss coming out of these issues. This is the Thursday edition of Down to Brass Tacks. We can go over to the lines. You know the number to call, 4341-790. You know the number to WhatsApp, and that is 266-IVOB, 266-4862. Good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Corey.
Yes, please.
How are you?
I'm fine, thanks. And you?
That's good. Not too bad. I want to deal with something this morning. I want to deal with monkeys and education.
Mm-hmm.
Now, recently listened to the CEO, Mr. James Paul, concerning agriculture. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And he talked about the monkeys being a nuisance. Now, if you take all of the land that the monkeys used to live on, what you think will happen eventually? You don't think they'll end up at your doorstep?
Yeah, eventually.
Good. Now, remember, you want to do monkeys and education.
Mm-hmm.
The Samuel Jackman Prescott Polytechnic. How much you know about that?
No fear, but no.
What was the setup? What was the setup for it?
You mean in terms of technical education?
What was the setup for it?
I don't understand the question. What was the setup?
In other words, was it set up for people to leave the 5 and 6 certificates to go in the polytechnic, or was it designed that if you didn't get certificates, that you could go there and get a trade and further your education?
I think the general sentiment was that it was for the people who you know, it's a gut in the head, so go with the hands. So
good.
It was more along that line, but I think it's changed over time due to demand and supply.
Good. That is what I want to do with monkeys and education. Now, if you take the habitat that the monkeys used to be on and transfer it into houses and lots, they're going to end up at you. If you take what we call poor people, because everybody talk about poor people, but you know everything in this country starts out poor, but not for the poor, for the middle class and the upper class. So if right now you check it, the boundary line, the goalpost has shifted drastically. Whereas you got people now leaving Harrison College, who it was never designed for. You got Queens College, who it was never designed for. But the parents at the time wanted the children to go to these schools.
I don't think so it was designed in a particular mind with schools in mind. It really had a purpose, and that was to provide technical education to the young people of Barbados. I don't think that we should put it into class and categories. I think what
we
should be looking
at, Corey.
No, but let's be serious, because the whole idea is that you don't want to get into this whole discrimination thing and all of that. I think we got to deal with the issue, and the issue for me is demand and supply. How do we supply more spaces for young people who want these opportunities? I think that's where the issue. Oh, it ain't for you. It wasn't for the white people. It wasn't for the rich people. It wasn't
for this
school. No, I am who's saying? I'm the person saying that, right? But I said maybe descend to that type of discussion. We'd never really get the kernel. We never really get to the solution. The solution is spaces. The solution is how do we create an environment where more young people can get the type of education that they desire, whether it be technical or otherwise. And I don't see why that should be harder to understand.
Yeah, but Corey, that comes right back down now to the other point which I will get into. I hear the former president of BUT, Pedro, talk about getting rid of 11 plus. So if you get rid of 11 plus, you should get rid of the driving test. Because the only way that we know of a fair way of testing our children is by 11 plus.
But it won't compare
the problem
it to.
Is, no,
it
no,
won't
no,
compare
no,
it to. Chalk and cheese.
No, no, it can't be chalk and cheese because you cannot be talking about one thing you don't have a solution.
But why it won't compare the two, caller, right? Is because the and I don't want to get 11 plus discussion. Again, that is one that we've talked more emotionally about than actually putting tangible solutions on the table. When you fail a driving test, I will put my neck on the block that people don't feel like failures. You go about and you set it again. When you fail or you feel as though you fail with 11 plus, there are many, many, many thousands upon thousands of people who go through life thinking that they're a failure. Because they go into an environment for the next 5 years of their life consistently. When you fail a driving test, you go back home or you go back to work. So there's a fundamental difference.
Corey, so when you go to Harrison College and Queen's College, and a party polytechnic, what have you been? You haven't been here because it was not designed for nobody left us.
No. There's a difference
because
between.
Because you have to go back and put in certificates. That's the whole problem.
There's a difference
it
between failing and being a failure. There's a difference. Yeah, I'm going to give you some
time. Then the failures, Corey, that's the problem. Then the failures. I hear Matthew Farley get on this program and say that in the cabinet, I've got no right working for $1,000 a day.
But that's one man's opinion. He had his and you have yours. But sir, why want you to
go post when it comes to people and then expect them, because when you shift the goalpost for people, what you expect? We expect criminals.
Listen, I can agree with your point that we but it goes back to what was saying from the beginning. I can shift the goalpost to complaining to solutions. Allow me to do that. I agree with you. Persons need that opportunity, as you're putting it, the persons who've not done academically well, people from the lower echelons of society, etc., etc. We must find and make sure that there's spaces for them, and they must not be displaced, as you're saying, by people who are more academic and so on. But let us focus on the real issue, and that is spaces. We need to have spaces. But I do take your point. I am taking your point. We must not make the disadvantage more disadvantage. I want to thank you for your call and starting off Brass Stacks. You're listening to the Thursday edition of Down to Brass Stacks. The WhatsApp says, we live here in Husbands Oxner's area. The person who owns the kite has taken the decision to fly the kite at night only. Every night without fail, we have to put up with this kite. Next one says, Corey, that kite flying issue is so true and real. I live in Freehill, Black Rock. The guys flying the kites are from closer to the RBC bank area. The hurtful thing is the kite disturbs others and not them. I know that area quite well. Good morning to you, Rambo, if you're listening. And this one says, good morning, trace the kite card and cut it. Good morning, Corey. I understand what your guest is saying. I live in Redmond Village, and every single night and on Sundays, there is a car that drives through this area with loud explosions that comes. It sounds like a cannon going off when the gear changes. And they drive up and down on the highway all night, keeping a tons of racket. Please, it is really out of order. This one says, kites in Claremont too, roaring all night near QC. Read about two more, then we go to the telephone lines. This one says, good morning, sir. The Easter season is over. They should be made to stop flying kites all night. We must be sensitive to other people's feelings. This one, hi, Corey. To deal with the noise from the kites at night, I turn on a fan, which is kind of quiet, but my brain just switches over to the quieter sound of the fan. Or how about listening to music? The brain will focus on the music. In this life, we have to find mechanisms of how to block out the distractions so that we can achieve our goals. This one says, this kite flying at night is lawless, and a lot of it happen, and even in node fly zones. The police should come and take them away. Last one, Corey, what's the difference when a kite keeps a noise to an open-air religious meeting, political meeting, living at the corner where every motorist blows their horn? Come, Corey. When you say A, you have to say B. Brass Stats, good morning. You're on the air.
Yes, good morning, sir.
Hi, good morning.
How are you doing?
I'm fine, thanks. And you?
I am all right.
All righty.
Barbados has descended into a lawless society where everybody does the light. You've got these minibus horns, these that are horns. I call Barbados as that our society. Barbados is the only island in the Caribbean where these that our people behave like that. These nuisance horns, they call them. Then you got these exhausts. These fellas put these exhausts in the car, and they're not on a race track. And all this is noise pollution. Nobody does or say anything about it.
You've traveled the Caribbean?
Yes.
And you're saying that this is unique to Barbados?
Unique to Barbados.
No, I've seen this in other places. I would say when I eat one of the things I want to compliment, if you want to look at the positive of Trinidad, Trinidad's minibus culture is so different. We could learn from them. But I've seen this exhibited elsewhere. But that's a minor point, because I think we got to focus on Barbados. And growing up, I used to hear Barbados is this well-regulated place, very orderly and so on. So the question is, how did we get here? And how do we get from here?
Both administrations allowed us that our culture to penetrate the whole society.
I agree that we have to put some of the blame on the administrations, but does everything begin and end with them?
Look, they're the ones who regulate or make the laws.
But are they the ones who raise the children that becomes ZR drivers? Are they the ones who raise these big hardback men who fly in these kites?
You got a point there. You got a good point there.
Well, thank you very much.
But I still think that things should be you talk about ZR. I call the drivers and the owners thugs.
You call them what?
Thugs.
Thugs?
Yeah.
You know what the thug is, sir?
Thugs. And let me tell you, I dislike those people.
No, you dislike no, you dislike their ways, you dislike what they do.
Right. And a lot of them are trying to blackmail the government. But this government doesn't do anything anyhow.
This is
the worst government we've ever had. This government don't do nothing right. Anyway, so I can sympathize with that guy with the kites. They even fight him around the hospital, and that should not be. There should be something done about noise pollution, this exhaust thing, this ZR horns.
All right, Carl, I want to thank you, and I want to actually pick up where you're going to leave off, which would be in terms of the representatives and so on. So I want to go over to Mr. Concerned Citizen and ask you the question. In terms of representation, in terms of trying to get this this problem resolved, what are some of these steps that you've taken?
Well, I went to see certain people for the constituency, and up in Norway County see them yet. I can't hear them. They're busy. They got meetings and so on. So that's about it.
So within the constituency, aren't there like, you don't have these things like box captainings and so on. So even if you cannot see the MP, who's the MP for your area?
The Prime Minister.
Okay. So even if you cannot see the MP, aren't there people that they would assign to be able to look after the affairs of the constituency if they're ever so busy?
Well, I've been to them too, and they say that they can't get hold of him, and, you know, and they would try to get me to speak to him.
They told you that?
Yeah, but I, up to now, I can't really get hold of him neither, because they say that he's at a meeting and busy. So,
but if his own people can't get hold of him, I don't think you will be able to.
No, no way. Yeah.
So, any other method in terms of actually speaking to the police about the law, trying to get a lawyer, like what other steps have you taken?
Well, there are other steps to be taken. It's just that, you know, the guys put the kites and you can't get them down. The policeman go. It's not the policeman's fault. Some people call the policeman at 11 o'clock and tell them about the kite. You can't call a policeman at 11 o'clock and tell them about the kite. You got to call the policeman upon the day, upon the evening, where you could see it, you know. So when the policeman ain't going to come out at 11 o'clock because the policeman can't see it, the policeman does go and help you.
Mm-hmm.
Some policemen tell me, man, I can go really deal with this here because I don't like this here. When the policeman go, they calm down. The next 2 days, a backup. Over and over and over all the time. 24.
I know that when you look at law enforcement, there's always ways around this. Even if you do a string operation, we might call it a sting operation, where you could stake out the kites, pun intended, stake out the owners of the kites, and catch them in the act of putting them up and pulling them down, charge a couple, make some examples, and I'm sure we could bring a resolution to the matter that way. We go back to the telephone lines. Good morning and welcome.
Hi, good morning.
Hi, good morning.
This kite conversation is fascinating for me because I have always wanted to fly a kite. And I have never been able to fly a kite. Even when my mother bought a kite, I couldn't get it stringed properly. That the tail wasn't too heavy. I have never been able to fly a kite. We have some young men and maybe some young women who are flying kites and who are doing it all year. I sympathize and empathize with the person who is with you, guest who is with you, because I get annoyed too. But I just wondered, just like how the guys develop a kite that can make that kind of noise, and that they do that for their fun to see who can have the longest kite up, the longest time making the loudest noise. What would happen if they were channeled or the same people who knew about kite flying before, who created that tail, that noise maker, whatever it is, were to encourage young people to make something that was more creative than the tail, than that noise. And then use their talents and sell it. I just wonder, because it is a conversation that is going to get nowhere. I do not support the behavior of threatening a neighbor, because you have the right to call for assistance if you need assistance. But in terms of the national conversation, it would be interesting to see how a kite can be altered. Because, you know, it's the Chinese that are the biggest suppliers of kites. And they, before they went to the nasty plastic, they would have used paper and sticks, mm-hmm. and so on. Just like how all young men do.
I want to commend you on the approach.
And my thread.
Oh, yes. I want to commend you on the approach. A similar approach would have been taken by some in relation to the motorbikes wheeling on the road. How about creating a track and so on? So we got to separate the issues and dissect it. So I want to compliment you on that, but I also want to underscore the real issue here, which is the insensitivity to people in relation to people's feelings. So we got to look at it both ways. And that's why we'll go back to the caller before. This is where representation gets involved in innovation. So the Ministry of Youth and Culture could create competitions and, you know, workshops and so on, where they can teach the people and then link it in with BADIC and these different places on how can we make and export unique kites and market them in this particular way. Something like that. may need tinkering with the idea, whatever, but that's their job, not mine. They're paid to do that, not me. So I want to compliment you on the approach, but I also want to underscore the whole idea of being insensitive. So thank you very much. 25 minutes before 11 o'clock. Brass Stats, you're on the air.
Good morning, Corey.
Hey, good morning to you.
How are you today?
I'm fine, thanks. What about you?
I'm good.
Alrighty.
I, after listening to the news this morning, knowing that the thing, I said the next 10 days you will have a date for the election. And hearing some moderators coming on here, not this one, on the other station, and telling you how God is going to be in this election. The God in it, the one with the bishops. Now, Corey. Well, the them that is are supposed to be ministers of religion and preaching the word of God and can't come to a conclusion. Are you hearing a moderator between Tuesday and Wednesday always tell you, oh, God is going to do this and God will choose the one leader in a hurry?
Look, fret not yourself. All things will be revealed unto ye who has patience. So again, all right, now, move along.
Whether you like it or not, this election is an election that the people of Barbados should really sit back and see how power could take charge of you without you even realizing what people that you vested power in can do to you. This long way of the election, and everybody talk about law. And the other thing, a lot of people don't remember that lady who got up in the bus and refused to move when they wanted her to move. That was law also. But I want you to take into consideration, this is where I want you to debate with me, St. John. And I can keep mentioning St. John. It is really an insult to intelligent people. Knowing that the last bishop of Barbados came from St. John, we have my former teacher, who was school is named after him, Graydon Seale, came from St. John, and no other than Sir Keith Hunt. We as St. John people can be insulted in such a way that all like today they are not sure of who would be the candidate that the government is offering. But this is the part that I want to debate with you. You said you went to school at Lodge, right?
Yes, in St. John.
In St. John. Another product, even from the environment, if nothing else. I believe the fresh air you breathe and such like. Now, let us look at the St. John Polyclinic that the government is speaking heavily about. I always say I support the parties. We got to take into consideration which one is more important than the other. Now, in St. John, if you take a geographical view of St. John, I think St. John had the most tenantries in its constituency. Therefore, many of them labored, many of our parents and their parents labored in agriculture. And through the effective piece of legislation, the Tenantry Freehold Purchase Act, that gave light to people in St. John. If you pass through Collington Tenant, if you pass through Poole Tenant, Henley Tenant, and you see the sort of houses that are being built in those tenantries, and it could only be done because of the Freehold Purchase Tenantry Act that was enabled to help these people to own their own land. On the other hand, you are hearing the fellow from St. James, or Don Villanis, trying to get people to own land. But these people in St. John had owned the land. Now, let me look at the polyclinic. The polyclinic was built or started by David Thompson, and it also started before the Bramford Tate Polyclinic. The government decided at the time to finish Bramford Tate Polyclinic and pay little or no attention to St. John, but they wanted to blame another administration for it. Which one do you think is more important, because a person could go to any clinic they want and the clinic shuts at 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock, or 6 o'clock?
Well, just a reminder, it's not just a clinic, okay?
I tell you, it closes, though. The point of dealing that it closes is not open 24 hours.
Okay.
Which is more important to the people of St. John? Owning their own land or the polyclinic that is gone down in the Guinness Book of Records for the longest building that I've been taking to build. Which one do you think is most important to those residents who toil hard on the plantation lands, and which is a disgrace when they look in the past and see it just growing cover. It's now the majority of the good lands from St. John. Which one do you think is more important to St. John people, having a piece of land where they could build a nice little wall houses, or the clinic that they could only go to every piece of bypass it, and they can't go after something as well?
McCulloch, I want to tell you which one would be important to me. I want to attempt to answer on behalf of the people of St. John.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because yeah, some people see their lot in life to be the speck of sand in the great wilderness, as opposed to striving for wealth or striving to for things that other people may see as important. So I think that sometimes that's where we make the mistake. When we use our own standards to judge people and our own thoughts and our own goals, different people have different ways of seeing things.
Well, that is all I want to mention today. This is a discussion that the St. John people should stay out and discuss among themselves and ask themselves if they are satisfied with the Freehold Tenantry Act, and then look and see if the polyclinic is more important to them, because they had a polyclinic there before. It is just that you build a new one and you claim it is a dairy clinic, which eventually at any time, and you look back, you'll see even in the conservative time, that each parish had what we call a hospital today, but it was then called an almshouse. So it wasn't nothing different to health. So, but the ownership of the land is most important to more people. Thank you, Corey. Left the discussion up for somebody else.
Thank you. Just some notes here. It says, in other countries, there are laws to deal with these kinds of nuisances. Kites left flying overnight, motorcycles, and now cars with deafening engine noise. But in this place, it seems anarchy reigns. Anybody can do anything they please. You want to tell me no one in authority can do anything about these problems? I cannot believe there are people claiming the right to be nuisances to others. Everywhere else in the world, these nuisances would have been dealt with, not in Barbados. This one says, noisy kites, motorcycles, cars, burning garbage, and the list continues. 80 minutes before 11, Brass Stacks, you're on the air.
Good morning.
Hi, good morning.
Yeah, good morning, Mr. Lane.
Hi, good morning.
Yes, I had planned to call tomorrow, but I said, Ms. Ellis is too close to me. I prefer to say this here, but you won't be involved. You'll be just a listener in this situation.
Mm-hmm.
But to raise what I have to raise today, it will put Mr. Ellis in the middle. Now, a couple of weeks ago, I called, and you told you, before I could get what I want to say, you stopped me to let me explain to me that I made a statement concerning moderators that I believe is connected to political organizations. You remember that?
I remember something like that.
Okay. Now, when I was about 13 years old or so, that was about 58 years ago or so, my stepfather, Mr. Garner, a resident of St. Philip, connected me to an organization that after today I'm still close to a member, which is the Democratic Labour Party. In my life, my two main issues, the two main things I discuss loud, is politics and test cricket. You will hear me arguing 2020. I will discuss it, but not. I won't go into no details with 2020. Test cricket and politics. I have a habit that I saw, you say, sick day politics. I, as a man, listen to Rush Limbaugh every day and Fox News and things like that. So you know that I'm really overboard politically. I have noticed something on Bastard, not DOB, because DOB is one of the best issues you can cross, crossing best personalities you can find. I find that when persons call Bastard and they're not anti-government, they are treated different. And I say this, let me tell you why I say, and I won't, because I tell you to listen, don't get the end up with this one. I had a gentleman on the air a couple of Tuesdays ago, a new candidate in this election here, Mr. Connolly. He came in late because I listen to Bastards every day. If I miss him, they listen to at night. So nobody can tell with Bastards. I got every program in my age. He came in late. And as a new candidate in a race, and you are a moderator or a reporter, you think it's right for the moderator to ask the gentleman questions that should be asked to the cabinet or sitting members or persons who just sit as a representative of a constituency?
Yes.
You think you should ask Mr. Connolly those questions?
Anytime you step forward to represent, be prepared. Be prepared. No, there are people that came in here on the People's Parliament on Tuesday, and they continue to make the point that when they get into office, they will have to assess what is there. They don't have the information. So what are you coming to lead for?
Okay, wait,
do your research.
I ain't dealing with that part about where you came, you know. Don't mix me up, Mr. Thing. I am dealing with one part of it. Do you believe that a reporter or moderator should ask a man a question that you know you shouldn't answer?
Not that you know. Who determines if you know somebody should answer or not answer something?
Let me go clear to give an idea one thing. Let me deal with a little something. Who to bear now? Or let's say Johnny Maboy. Do you believe if Johnny Maboy was put on your program on Tuesday, that a moderator should ask him a question like this? Let me find one. Oh, yeah. What you think that the leader of the opposition, whenever she sits with the other members and they make a decision, she never follows what was discussed at the meeting. She always go out and do different to what they agree on. You see that? Should I ask John Boboy that?
No, you shouldn't ask leading questions, period, as an interviewer, right? But I think if he's asked that, he should be in a position to answer it.
This is the point. The former prime minister said that. That the leader of your opposition,
right,
whenever they sit and make a decision what they're going to parliament to do, they just got to sit there wondering what's going on. She goes on what she feel like and nothing what they say.
Right, and but that is the former leader's opinion. And if that is question is what hold a minute, caller. What you don't understand, right, is that this is a discussion, a dialogue, and not a monologue. If you want a monologue, you can go into your mirror. You kind of brass that, so you got to have a discussion. And I am trying to put to you that, yes, it is a question that can be put to him, and he should be able to answer it.
That is what I'm asking.
You think?
I'm asking, do you think it's fair that Johnny Maboy, who was a member of that group, should be asking a question like that? That's what I'm asking.
But he's part of the group. If we do that all the time. Let me ask you the question. If the entire... Hold a minute, caller. If the entire cabinet, right, or party changed for the Democratic Labour Party, you're telling me they get 30 new candidates, that you cannot ask, you got to start from 2018 and go forward, you can't ask them anything going back. When you represent an organization, you've got to be able to put the defense for the organization and the explanation going back to 1956. Okay, and that is what they need to do. The same way y'all go and y'all use the legacy of Errol Barrow, did this and that. The same way the things that were done back then, you got to be able to answer the question on behalf of your organization.
Do you want me to ask you why I believe that you shouldn't ask Johnny Maboy that question?
I don't even think it's that important to discuss at a national level anyhow. This sounds like shop talk.
Let me tell you why I see you shouldn't ask it. And why I don't think Mr. Connolly should have been asked questions that connected to the...
But, Carla, in all seriousness, right, I don't mind critique of the station, reporters, programs, anything, but what you're talking about a particular person asking a particular person a question, I think you should get their number and actually go and discuss that with them later on. Because, to me, you're off base today. What are you talking about in making any sense today? I have a lot of respect for you, but today, man, you're off course, man. Go and come again. We'll come again as this year, selector. 11 minutes before 11 o'clock. This is Down to Brass Tack. All right, as we prepare to say farewell to our guest, Mr. Concerned Citizen, I'd like to give you the opportunity to make some closing remarks.
All I can say that I hope that people don't understand, and other people out there that who the kites are bugging understand, and, you know, hope people would really take this into a real deep concern. And the authority out there whoever listening to me now would do something about it, because it ain't easy at all, at all, at all. It's not easy.
Where do you see this going from here?
Well, right now I don't know where it's going, but I would like it to go in the people's favor that can't sleep. I don't know how long. I don't know how long it's going to take. I don't know if it can happen next year and if it can happen tonight again. But I hope the authority out there listening and appealing with them to stop this nonsense, because it is not right.
I want to make an appeal to you, though, and that is that I can, you know, off air, really, you're very upset, and I would like for you to let peace reign as much as possible. And one of the reasons they want to use your name is because we want to maintain your safety after the program and so on, because we know people would have made threats to you and so on. But I would hope that you can, you know, keep your head on, keep your head up, and, you know, don't put yourself in foolish trouble for foolish people. You know, as I say, trouble is very easy to get into, very difficult to get out. Yeah? So I want to thank you for coming by.
Thanks very much.
All right, goody. Down to Brass Tacks, we continue. 5 minutes before 11, you know the number to call, 434-1790. Good morning and welcome. You're on the air.
Good morning, sir. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks. And you?
Yes. My concern here is that I had saw on some news there on Facebook where is that the candidate for the Democratic Party was getting some advertisement to the news where he was paving a road in the 2nd Avenue. At least I know the avenues, the 2nd and 7th, quite born in New Orleans, a purebred New Orleans man. I'm overseas, and I know the Orleans that way. And I can tell him the last time any road was done in the Orleans by the Democratic Labor Party was in 1961. Men used to get about $12.50 working at NTW. And they got a raise that day they was building the road in the 3rd Avenue opposite our home. And they was paid $20.10. And the men kept the money up in the air, yampa, shout out. These men never see so much money in their life yet. Because people was working for $6.40, $5.40, $7.80, $9.60 was big money, because you ride a bicycle with a light, the Maastricht, Perry, or one of them, where they put $9.60 in for riding with a light. And people didn't even used to work for $9.60. But there was only four roads in the earnings. The 8th Avenue, where you come off of Kensington New Road. Mm-hmm. Kensington New Road was a lovely road. You come into the 8th Avenue, and the 7th Avenue was a rough road. It was down like if you'd met concrete grips and put over it. It didn't pave in the tower like the 8th Avenue and Marshall Gap from Baxter's Road. And all the rest was mud. I lived in the 6th, I was born in the 6th Avenue, New Orleans. And they used to park the rocket engine when they start the 60 roads up on the all window.
Let me ask you this question, though, because you seem very familiar with the area. What is your confidence level with the people in the area that they would have enough vision, common sense to be able to assess the situation and believe they can think whether these persons are being genuine and they have a vision for the constituency and therefore they will vote for them, or that they would be able to see it as a ploy if they believe so, that, you know, people come and fix roads weeks before elections. Why support them? Why suffer for 5 years and then take a road at the end of the term and give a vote? Do you have that type of confidence in the people of the Orleans and the people of the city to be able to assess these situations and make decisions based on what they're seeing?
Yeah, the people in the city is capable of making decisions. And whatever decision they make, they've got to live with it. But remember, my reason for calling is in the manner in which the candidate was stating that for 40 years and nothing didn't happen down there. It is 57 years ago that the Democratic Labor Party built roads. They came back and they had Peter Miller as a candidate in the city. They had Patrick Todd. you forget them there. I cannot forget because I know everybody. I told Billy Miller when she became, when she won the by election, I said, Billy, I would not vote for you. Tabby, bring her around, and Lionel Craig. And Lionel Craig, you know Lionel Craig, because we used to paint Lionel Craig, Caroline, and I used to call him Lambert. So I said, walk me, Lambert. He said, come here, little man. This is Billy. I said, no, Billy. I know Billy going to school. I know Billy. I ain't voting for Billy. I like the Baptists. I don't want to vote for the Democratic Labour Party. And after the semi school half there, I did damn it then. Because I was like, come on, man. I got in my mind to vote for you during the school, and you spending your school half there, and I was willing to learn. And you know, thousands of us come out at 12, 15. Then the shift changed, and we going to school from 12:30 to 5 o'clock. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
If you guys don't know, a lot of people don't know nothing about Barbados, you know.
They don't understand the history.
Leonard's Secondary Modern School that just started the evening classes with adult education that turned into what is the UE. A lot of people don't know nothing about Barbados. You should have seen these hundreds of people coming to go to St. Leonard's Boys' School and Girls' School, adults, to get that evening education that after it developed, they took it down by the harbor complex, and then it turned into this big UE. But a lot of people don't know nothing of what is going on. St. Leonard's School was St. Leonard's Secondary Modern Boys School when I'd been there.
I want to take this opportunity, though, to highlight something. I want to highlight something that we can be proud of. When we look at some of the surveys that put Barbados high in terms of school systems, where I would have my problem really would be the delivery method and criteria and so on. But in terms of the system of getting everyone a desk and a chair, being able to go to school for the whole day, is something quite unique. And there are many places across the world that, you know, I went to Jamaica some years back and I saw they're still going to school in some places half day as well. But all of our students, how they would have a place in school and they're able to go to school from 9 to 3 for the most part. So that's something I think we should highlight as a positive.
This is the highest part. Barbados was built on the backs of people that isn't in the universities. The majority of the people that went to school was pretty bright in the sense, because women was real bright, you know. But the attitude that the country and the world was so male chauvinist against women, that people had women, that women can get jobs, women can this, there was to go in the house and bake, keep the house, cook, and that junk. But now that women, Henry Ford opened that big door in Barbados with the women, and you see the women now showing you that they're always bright. Women, they're always bright, but they were being held down. And just people keep walking. But if you go and look back anytime and even check the statistics of education in Barbados, you would see back in them days that women was brilliant. Women was real bright. I don't know how people think that women only get right yesterday.
No, not in the Caribbean.
Off the backs of men that who didn't have degrees, not so third standard, fourth standard, and these people could do anything. The brain was so good. And everybody that had a big job down the islands was on Barbados.
I remember all of these things. I remember people talking about all these things.
And
now
today we got the most brilliant. I'm disappointed, angry, because they say we got the most educated government ministers and MPs. A lot of them thinking about Barbados. I'm disappointed with you guys.
Well, I'm sure that they're hearing you and me.
Four beers for a dollar. You can go buy four beers for a dollar. Wildcat strikes in the port. Wildcat strikes in the port helped cripple Barbados, causing the port workers at the time made the paying $8,000 in taxes when the week come. You imagine you taxing a man $8,000 when the week come. You know how much money you're making? And then you see a Barbados Workers Union, the Frank Walker, turn around and put them on Trotman on time a weekly paid. They're being paid W-E-A-K-L-Y weekly.
All right, Carla, we're going to stick a pin here. What I want to take from your conversation, though, is that we have a lot to be happy for, but we, at the same time, we have a lot of work to do. So thank you for calling.